Hello, everyone. It's Black History Boot Camp. We are on Pleasure Principle number 12 in our 21-day walking meditation series, Banish Shame.
Hello!
What
up?
Oh my God. I was somewhere and they were like, ma'am, are you doing a prison call out here? I can't remember what it was. And I was like, no, that's a prison call.
What was you saying, caca?
I was going hooty hoo. And they was like, I'm pretty sure.
Hooty hoo is a prison call?
Yeah, that's, I was like, I never heard of that in my life.
We used to, when I was a teacher in Bridgeport, Connecticut, shout out to Ayanna Gray. Who, let's face it, is also one of the co-founders of Girl Tech, because she used to take some Girl Tech with me. But she was a dean. She was the dean of students, which is the hard dean, and I was the academic dean, which is the easy dean. We used to be at each end of the school, and we used to be like, "Cuckoo!" Kids thought we were insane, man, but we got a crunk school. It was so amazing. Shout out to Devon, he's our principal. Yeah, we had such a good time.
I love your educator days. It was like, we were just really trying to figure out life. And we was just like, how do we get in where we fit in to make like the most dramatic impact? And what does that look like? I just remember those days feeling like everything felt possible. And it was just like, how can you do this work? And I remember when you were just like talking about opening schools, talking about your students, like all of the dreams you had. And it's,
and in the spirit of pleasure, it was also grueling. Like, I feel like oftentimes we burn out our brightest at a young age. We put them in these underfunded nonprofits. We put them on the front lines of education. We put them in the military. And we just burn them out. I mean, Ayanna and I used to sit in the cafeteria and have literally a sunlight on our face, a sun lamp. You know, those sun lamps, some old school sun lamps? We used to just put them in our face. And we used to be like, banish this seasonal affective disorder and depression. Like, it was so bad. We were like in the throes of Connecticut and through this, you know, this charter school. It was a mess, you know. So
and the
it
sunlight
was
is filtered
hard
up there. So you especially got to get your vitamin D. Yeah.
The people of Africa need more vitamin D. Somebody just make that a t-shirt. We just do. If you're over the Mason-Dixon line, you need sun, high noon sun. Go outside right now. If you feel like you got an attitude with your mama or your man or anybody, you are vitamin D deficient. Go get some sunshine. Go get some. If you wonder why me and Vanessa are giddy every day, because we'd be out here walking outside every day, the sun is on our foreheads, is healing us, anointing us.
Ain't that the truth? Look, and I was like, I noticed I've been walking 5 days straight. I really noticed that this week we started on Monday and now it's Friday. And I was like, I feel it like in my body. And I feel so different than I felt at the beginning of this week. And
you know why?
It's weird.
Because it's stress relief. It's stress relief.
It's stress relief.
That's why I was late. I didn't even acknowledge I was late. I came on talking about some hootie hoo, talking about some caca. I didn't even acknowledge that I was late. I'm sorry. I'm going to just call you. But I was in the throat. I was smoking like a cartoon character over her computer. I was smoking and I was writing about this, Vanessa. I was like, we call them the three deadly eyes. The things that are killing Black women is inactivity, isolation, and injustice. And that is our framework at Girl Trek that we are solving for those three things, right? And those three deadly eyes that we have developed and started talking about as the root causes of disease in Black communities, inactivity is the easiest one to solve for, because if you just walk 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, the number one killer of Black women is heart disease, and your risk of heart disease plummets by 53%, because it alleviates stress, it brings you into community with your neighbors and your walking group, your crew, and it's just really easy, accessible, affordable physical activity. So I'm just like, we're on to something. So tell your cousins and them. Tell everybody.
And it's so simple what we're onto in the most powerful way. Like, it is so powerful. And it is like, and it's like sometimes we so many things in life have to be complex and have to be nuanced. And like, here's an area where we are telling you this thing, this walking, it transcends in so many ways. And it's just like, lace up and go outside. I do.
This
love
is
that
why we're the most powerful health movement in the country, maybe the world. And want to give us no money because they'd be like, "No, what y'all doing? We walking." So, I'm excited about today's call.
I'm excited about today's talk, Hu, because I was like, first of all, it's Tupac's birthday. Second of all, it's Juneteenth weekend. Third of all, we talk about Lil' Kim and Shane. And I'm just like, this is what it's a lot.
It's Juicy Friday. It's Juicy Friday.
It's Juicy
happy
Friday.
Happy birthday, Tupac. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Tupac. I never forget, because one of his favorite lines, June 1, 6, 71, the day mama pushed me out my womb, told me you can get paid. So just, and I have my bandana tied like him today. I was like, let me go ahead and
that's hilarious.
Tie my bandana like Tupac.
And
I put some black women you are welcome signs up in my neighborhood, and I put them on with my Tupac rat, and I'm Gucci down, girl check down from head to toe, y'all. You can't tell me nothing. I'm blueberry out today. I got my girl check sneakers on. I got my girl check leggings on. I got my girl check tank underneath my girl check shirt. I'm talking about my girl check jacket. And I was walking around putting them black women you are welcome flyers up. I was just like, here go, tell me nothing. And I got laminated by accident. The FedEx actually laminated them, but I was like, she's like, I'm sorry. I was like, no, these laminate ones don't work. So,
you're like, this goes stay in the community forever.
Like,
you know, them we buy home signs. You'd be like, how long is this going to stay here? These are going to be black women are welcome signs everywhere. That's good. Well, I'm not Gucci down with all my girl tricks. I got on a sweatshirt that Carla gave me.
For the both of us, Margaret. For both of us. I got it for the both of us. Sometimes,
thank
y'all,
you.
We walk in. Just one of your friends can carry the whole blue load, and you can just have like an accent or a slash.
I saw Brene Brown. She had this good video about relationships, and she was like, 50-50 is a lie in relationships. She goes, I just look at my husband sometimes and I'll be like, what you got? And he'd be like, I got 20% today. And she goes, it's all right. I got you. I can bring in 80. Like, and then sometimes, she said, sometimes he'd be like, I'm at 15. And she'd be like, well, I'm just at 20. And then we got to make a plan that we don't need to talk to each other. She was like, and I was like, this is so good. So you got 100% of the outfit on. I got none of it. But I did go to Girl Tech University this morning, which is, we're doing big things, but we're testing out this pilot university platform where there's about 100 women on there who are learning. We're learning so many things. And we had this amazing woman this morning who was talking about proper walking form and cardiovascular health and the talk test and all this stuff. And I came off of mute and I was like, I'm on my walk listening. And she was like, this is exactly what we talked about. You hear how she had a breath? She was like, that's the wrong zone. Just like, listen, she's right. If you walk
I was
fast,
surprised. I didn't know none
talk.
Of that stuff. She was talking about the pulse and the resting heart rate. I was like,
yeah,
I,
good.
For the life of me, wouldn't know how to calculate it. And that's why we need that like practical information. We really do. No.
Ooh, shout out to Makeba. She's so smart. One of our Girl Trek University instructors. Yep. So Lil' Kim, what we got to learn about Lil' Kim?
Well, first of all, look, I might not be the teacher for this. In my household, my aunt was not talking about sex. And I was having sex at 15 years old, because people in Seattle, you might know the story. My aunt beat up my boyfriend. It was a notorious story. He got found underneath the bed. And she one-two'd him, like, this ain't going down in my house, and you think you're grown? And she packed my stuff that day and put me out. And I was out of the house for like almost 1 year because I was a 15-year-old who was having sex. And granted, that's one way to handle it, just be like, you gotta go. But another way also is to be like, well, let me have a conversation with her, let me talk to her about it, all of the things that didn't happen in my scenario. I also saw that Buster got married this weekend. He eloped in Las Vegas, so shout out to Buster.
this is the perfect timing for this conversation. Congratulations,
yeah.
Buster, for finding your happiness.
Look,
Buster was set back by that traumatizing experience under that bed. I'm glad he found love.
Look, I don't think he was set back because he got like 4 or 5 kids, and that also was my aunt's point. And so she was like, I see a future you don't even understand, and let me try to help you avoid it because you are not ready. And she just didn't have the language. She was right. I wasn't ready, by the way. She just didn't have the language for it. And I just honor that so many women might not have the language for it. And I want to tell this story that potentially has nothing to do with Lil' Kim or this conversation, but I thought it was so fascinating, and I do think it has something to do with it. Somehow I went down a whole rabbit hole of studying Rwanda, Morgan, and you've been to Rwanda and are much more of an expert on Rwanda than I am. But one of the things I learned about Rwanda was that the World Economic Forum has a ranking for global gender. It's like the Global Gender Gap Report. And of the 144 countries on there, Rwanda's way at the top. It's the fifth country ranked. And only one through four before it are Nordic countries. And they are recognized for being a country that has more female women in parliament than any other country in the world. They have the highest rate of female labor force. They've passed laws granting gender equal land rights. They have paid maternity leave, 3 months for women. Like, they have all of these very progressive laws. And a lot of the reflection that I read has to do with, of course, post the 1994 genocide and a lot of the men being murdered and them really centering women in the country. But then a lot of it has to do with, which I didn't know, the country's belief about women's sexual pleasure, which actually predates hundreds of years, the genocide. And a lot of people have gone there to study that Rwanda is a society and culture built off of an idea that it's the man's job to sexually please the woman first. And it dates back to a story about the queen, and the queen's husband was out, and the story gets deep, y'all. She had to sleep with the guard. The guard was shy. She was teaching God. But anyways, it is a country that intentionally has centered, in some ways, they say, women's pleasure, like, inside of the homes. And in fact, it is one of the countries where it is very common that grandmothers and aunties and mothers, when young girls are younger, and especially before they're entering into marriage, just sit them down and break it down for them and have a conversation and talk to them about pleasure and about knowing their body.
Tell you why this ain't off. This ain't off at all. This is exactly what Lil' Kim needed to hear, everybody. It's because our friend Jay, who don't like her name on No Black History Month, because she's important, she told me when she was in, she used to live in Rwanda. She was a diplomat in Rwanda. That she was
I didn't know her story was from Rwanda, by the way. You did tell me this, but I didn't realize that she was also talking about Rwanda.
Yeah, she was in Rwanda and she was in Tanzania. And there's a very unified culture in that area around Lake Kivu, that whole high altitude. There's just the same ancient people are the same ancient people in those areas. And so she's in Tanzania. She said she went to like a bridesmaids kind of thing, or like a, you call it a what do we call it here
when the bridal shower together?
A bridal shower, yeah. But if she was like, she was not prepared for this bridal shower. She said all the aunties, it was like closed, and it was like draw the windows, draw the shades, and the aunties went to a teach-in mode, teaching this woman about sex, this grown woman that's about to get married, and how to please her husband, how to be experience pleasure, how to, and Janine was like, clutch my pearls. She got, you know, everybody loves her.
Yeah.
She got invited, and she was just like taking, she was like, I was taking copious notes, like, now what? Now do what? Now do who? Now huh? And they was like, you know, when you're on your cycle, this is what you do. This is, you know, you use your arm in this way, you use your And I was like, what? She was telling me all about it. And she was like, you know, that we just don't have that in America. We don't have that kind of transparency about sex. We don't have that, like, knowledge share from generations of women because we have so much shame around it. But part of that is just our collective trauma. It just is.
It is.
I was writing about...
you go ahead.
No. I was writing about Sally Hemings for the Monday email coming up. And I was just like, it's not okay that she was 16 and that the president of the United States was sleeping with her. That's not okay. We have like collective actual trauma of rape and molestation and all these really bad things that we don't actually, we associate the act of sex with something bad. We really do. And
that's
that
exactly
is
right.
Not the case. It just isn't the case. When I went back to Ghana, it just isn't the case. And I'm not saying there's not a lot of, you know, they call it defilement there, which is like sexual violence and like, and rape, and particularly against minors. There's like there is that. And there's like child brides, and there's all sorts of things. which are like the fringe for sure now, particularly in the cities. But most young people just have a more open disposition, and a vocabulary and a clear desire for having a sexual relationship. It just is.
Yeah.
It's just different.
And
yeah.
It's so important, because even when you mentioned menstruation, I was reading some statistics that talk about how I think it's something like 49% of Black girls say that no one has ever talked to them about menstruation. And I'm just like, if nobody is even talking to you about getting your period, then just imagine like that you're learning from all sorts of places, from Pornhub to the schoolyard, about your body in ways that don't affirm you. And it's just a dangerous cycle. And look, and we ain't got no hands raised either. So y'all's like, ain't nobody talk to me either. And that's why I knew immediately when we were.
No, when you said you ain't the expert, I was like, Vanessa, you are the expert. You are the expert. And I didn't want to say it because I didn't want you to think that was shame. That's actually praise.
Yeah.
You really have figured out your own sexual liberation in a way that is empowered, in a way that is forward-leaning, in a way that is brave. You really have. I mean,
and let me tell you, Morgan, even getting put out the house, it was like, okay, now everybody know my business. That was the first thing that was in my mind, right? I remember it being Mother's Day weekend also, because we were going to have like a big waffle breakfast. So all my aunties was coming over. And I was just like in my spirit, like, oh my God, everybody knows I'm having sex. And then all my aunties came over, and God bless my auntie Diane, God rest her soul. She pulled me to the side and she was like, don't be worrying about your auntie Peggy. You know, she approved anyway. And she was like, and she acted like she went out there doing what she needed to do. And then, and you know, your auntie, there's a whole rumor in my family that one of my aunties was dating Quincy Jones, and then my grandma found Quincy Jones like coming through the window, y'all. So then she was like, hey, you know, Trisha. So, and like, I just remember my auntie Diane like pulling me to the side and affirming me. And also, I do remember that and my grandpa was there, y'all. It's like, just imagine this. It's just like, oh, you want to melt into the corner, but you can't melt into the corner. So those are the moments that define you. Those are the moments where you decide that, like, one, I'm not defined by any one act in my life. And then two, also, I just knew it wasn't I wasn't inherently bad, or it even wasn't inherently bad. And I did all sorts of research. I always used to read books and all sorts of stuff. I linked what I think are three good books in the email today for women who just need a starting place. And the starting place on those books even talks about the historic context of Black women and our bodies, and how we have been overly sexualized, and how a lot of times then the opposite of that was to say we had to be very buttoned up, right? There was no middle ground in a lot of faith. Yeah, no middle ground in a lot of communities or families. There was just this deep fear that Black women had been commodified for so long, had been literally from the auction block, where people were looking at our actual bodies, to us being forced and impregnated, to the rapes that we had to endure, and the fear that really came with that. And then our uncles,
to even what we were talking about before, where our, to even what we were talking about yesterday or the day before, where our grandmothers were having 11 and 12 and 17 kids,
right,
in the case of Mary McLeod Bethune's mother. And that's not forced rape, but that's almost the industrialization of Black female wombs, where in order to survive economically, you have to be laborers. Like, it's just like, not even in order to make the grade and sharecropping, you have to continue to produce laborers. And that's unbelievable to say it in that way. And no disrespect to my grandmother, Lisa.
But to birth control. And so it's like,
yeah, and if pleasure is
about birth control,
but also if sex is the only pleasure you have in your day because you're working sun up to sundown, and like so many of us on this phone know something about that, you'd be exhausted, and the only pleasure you have is to crawl up into bed. I'm just saying, imagine during slavery, so you're gonna have a lot of kids.
Yeah.
So All of that is just so powerful, Vanessa. And then, like, I feel like I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum, where I was just, there was so much judgment. First of all, y'all done got me messed up with this bell hooks. I've been celibate for 4 days, y'all. That's what I'm saying, because bell hooks done messed me up. Bell hooks done messed me up, and I done talked all that junk on the episode, and then I was just like, fine. I will hang up some posters in my house and practice self-care and start acting like this. And then the man gonna come on the phone, talk about he's silent for 17 years. I was like, I have no discipline in my life. So I just instituted some discipline 4 days ago. My poor cowboy, but I was just like, this is it, right? So I'm not even in right now. I'm the opposite of you. I'm not an expert in sex. I don't barely ever had sex in my life. I didn't. Well, I've had a lot of sex, but I only had a couple partners. My life. I didn't start having sex until 19, which I have feelings about, because when I then had it, it was so disruptive in my life because it was such a force that I didn't know how to wield, that it was ruinous when I started having sex at 19, because I just had no anchor points. I had no guidance. I had no one to talk to. And the man that I was with knew way more than I did. And I was just taken advantage of in this way that wasn't forceful. It was intimate partner, like exploitation in this way that I just was like, I don't like this. Like I did. And then I got married.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty much it. That's pretty much the sequence. Then I got married. So I'm like the exact opposite. I mean, I ain't saying I'm the opposite. You had a different path.
Well, that's the beauty of being an adult. No, it's a beauty of being a healed adult woman. Which is that, wow, like I am every single day I'm still coming into my own around my sexuality.
Yeah.
That's the mirror work today was to love every dimple and dip and to look at yourself in the mirror and say that you are a sexual being and that's okay. And it's going to be constant everyday work for all of us. I mean, now I'm a woman who's going to be 46 in the fall, and it's like your sexuality changes even then, and you have to reckon with it at every phase of your life and still call it. I still want to call it to the table. It's still a huge part of my power. It's still a huge part of my joy. But I'm learning to yield it in different ways, to experience it in different ways, to discipline myself around it in different ways. And definitely it's a lifelong journey, but to do it for myself just means that it's a much more enjoyable experience with my partner when I just understand and I'm in a safe environment and all the other things that come with just being mature enough to enter into sexual relationships. And I do think that there's a ton of women who are not ready for sexual relationships, and it has nothing to do with your age even necessarily. Like there are adult women who just aren't ready. And that also, when you live in a society, and this is what we're talking about with Lil' Kim, is when you live in a society that also is pushing sex in the way it has and it's so at the forefront, it can make you question everything. And there are some women who are like, no, my faith says I'm going to wait till I'm married. There are some women who are overcome, you know, there's all sorts of things that I know women are experiencing or choices that they're making. And it's such a deeply personal experience and choice. And here at Girl Trek, I want women just to feel like they can make the choices for themselves in a safe way that does not include shame. Shame is so destructive, y'all. Shame is so destructive, and the Holy Spirit does not have shame for you. There is not one thing can separate you from the love of God. Not one thing, no matter what people say, not one thing can separate you from the love of God. And so when you understand that, you can approach your own choices and your own history and your own past from a different perspective and point of view. And I really offer that to people. And I love Lil' Kim. When she came out, 1995, Junior Mafia, I knew that she was a spirit animal, because I was like, this is somebody who makes me not feel ashamed of my feelings about how I feel about sex. This is somebody who I could see had been in spaces where she had felt like she wasn't accepted before. I could see it from the way she moved. I could still see it in her right now, even through the physical changes that her body has taken on and the people who've been commenting on what I see in her as a woman who is saying, no, but here I'm standing with a vision for myself, and I'm just trying to navigate the same traumas and pain y'all doing, but I'm doing it out in a public way. so that you could judge me about it. Now what? Like, so I have always loved that about her. And I just want to say a little, tell a little bit about her story, because she is an icon, quite frankly. And she has not only helped to redefine hip hop, but she has helped to redefine sexuality, and at least certainly sparked conversations through her provocation, which I really appreciate. I wish I could have found this video, but I couldn't. But there's the most dope video of this woman saying, and she like, Brooklyn is a bloodline, not a borough. Brooklyn is a bloodline, not a borough. So shout out to Brooklyn, best guy, stand up, because Kimberly Denise Jones is one of your own. She is from Brooklyn, and I did not know this, Morgan. Her parents were both from Trinidad. Did you know that?
But no, I didn't know. Sorry, and Bullet is not from Trinidad, it's from Jamaica. You know, Kalima mad at me over there right now. Shout out to our CFO from Trinidad. No, I didn't know she was from Trinidad.
I didn't know she was from Trinidad.
It looked like every video looked like she at Carnival.
Exactly. Yeah. So she was born Kimberly Denise Jones in Bed-Stuy. Both of her parents, Ruby Mae and Linwood Jones, they were from Trinidad. As a little girl, she was, she witnessed her parents have a super tumultuous and violent relationship, as she described it. And she said that she saw her mother with a black eye, that her father had told her mother to tell people that she had felt that she had fallen, and that it was just a violent relationship. And eventually, when she was 8 years old, her parents decided to split, and her mother moved them to like New Rochelle, New York, or like a super white part of town of New York. And she, her father stayed in Brooklyn. And she said when she got to New Rochelle that she was relentlessly bullied, and that she was like the only black girl in the neighborhood. She was super short. She stands less than 5 feet even now, 4'11". She was brown skin, and she felt like so out of place. Her mother also was really struggling. So her mother was struggling with finances and just being stable. And so her mother was like, I just let her go back to Brooklyn to live with her father because I thought it was the best thing for her. Unfortunately, it wasn't the best thing for her. And her father, all the way from like, moved back on him when she was like 9 or 10 years old, and they fought violently in the home. She said that her father was verbally abusive to her and physically abusive to her, and that it especially became bad when at 13 he found out that she had had sex. And then he started telling her, you're nothing but like a hoe, just like your mother. You're not going to amount to anything. And she, even at one point, they had gotten to a physical altercation. She pulled scissors on him, tried to stab him, all this stuff. And she was just like, the house was just too tumultuous. And by the time little Kim was 14 years old, she left the house and was living on the streets. And so she was a 14-year-old navigating the streets of Bed-Stuy. And she said she was, a lot of the choices that she made at that early age around sex were about survival. And she said she was dating like the local drug dealer. She was dating the guys where she could sleep at their houses. She was just looking for safety. She was looking for love and care. And it is so many girls who are in that current situation right now, where there it is. And there's a real, when I used to work at a organization called Our Place DC, where we helped women who were incarcerated transition back into society. And one of their biggest challenges, of course, was housing. And many of those women talked about survival sex as a necessary kind of situation for a woman who has no place to go and is living with some man who she otherwise wouldn't be living with, but does it because she has no place to go. And little Kim Morgan was one of those girls. So she was out on the street fast. She then enrolled in, was out of school, but then re-enrolled in school. I think it was at Brooklyn Academy when she was like 16 years old. She re-enrolled there. At that school, Nas was there. Foxy Brown, who was there, who would later become her like kind of rap rival, arch nemesis, was there. But she was really embedded by that point in this burgeoning hip hop culture that was sweeping through Brooklyn. And then it was at 17 years old on a happenstance street corner that she ran into a young kind of round hip hop boy on the rise named Christopher Wallace. And I'm just saying this to say that little Kim was only 23 years old when Biggie got murdered. And so just think of the whole scenario that we all know, Little Kim, Biggie, Faith, all that. They were babies, Morgan. These are just little kids, like these big things that happen in history. And yet she was 17 on the corner when she met Biggie. She was 19 years old when Junior Mafia in 1995 released their first album. And she was she was 18 years old when Junior Mafia released their album. And she was 19 years old when her debut album, Hardcore, hit the scene.
Wow.
Yeah. If you know anything about Hardcore, first of all, the biggest female rappers at the time that Hardcore came out were MC Light and Queen Latifah. And both MC Light and Queen Latifah, dope MCs, super defined by like their kind of women's empowerment lyrics and like who you calling a bitch. So if you imagine, there had never been somebody who came onto the scene with this kind of, she had a hardcore flow. She mimicked it after Biggie. She had lyrics, and yet she had this very calculated, very intentional, crafted by her, and Biggie was a big part of crafting this image. They called it an alter ego, Little Kim. So intentionally in your face, explicit woman who was rapping about the fact that her priority was her sexual pleasure and her sexual experience and not the man she was with. It blew people's mind. It rocked the industry. It blew back the wigs of all the bell hook feminists of the world, Morgan. They were writing article after article about how she was destroying the image of Black women, how she was buying into the commodification of sex, how she was taking us back decades. And Little Kim continued to affirm that, no, just like the men who you laid up with and celebrating for doing the same thing, I have a right to define my own sexuality in the way that I want it. And so she continued to be super brazen about it. She continued to be in your face. I don't know if you guys remember her at the Grammys with her famous kind of like one boob look. So she continued to put sex in people's face in a way that she didn't apologize about. She did, however, also, Morgan, and this is a little bit to our conversation about beauty, she very candidly talks about her own physical beauty and insecurities. And she very candidly talks about the fact that even in hardcore and even when people were celebrating her, she just still had a hard time believing or seeing herself as beautiful. And she did start to get a lot of plastic surgery, and she was wearing colored contacts and she was wearing a blonde wig. And it was part of her persona, but she said it was a part of a persona that was really hiding for her, her true genuine vulnerabilities of still not feeling beautiful. And I just honor that she was, that she has those conversations, that she's not in a space of even denial about herself. She's saying, I feel this way and I'm working through these things publicly and these are the choices that I'm making.
Yeah, I think I hear everything that you're saying, and then I think that there is a lens of health to lay on top of this, because have the conversation or not, like body dysmorphia is an actual thing. It's an actual mental illness when you want to augment and change your body so that you're acceptable in your own sight is like an actual dangerous thing. You know what I mean? And so like, I just want to, from like anorexia to bulimia to dysmorphia to all of these sorts of things that no one ever talks about with Black girls,
right,
or overeating, by the way, because you want to have rounder body, rounder booty, rounder boobs, all these sorts of things. These are forms of like mental unwellness that I just also want to acknowledge.
Yes, I agree with you. And it's why when we were having the conversation yesterday and I was talking about Summer Walker, I was just like, we at least grew up in a landscape where there was like a diversity of bodies, I feel like, and a diversity of looks, but the field has just gotten in some ways narrower and narrower. Although we have Wakanda Forever, and we have Lupita, and we have, I think, a lot of women who are pushing against the grain, it's still somehow the like dominant message seems to be that like, as we are not beautiful and we have to make changes. And I just don't want that for anybody. And when I see Little Kim now, I don't want that for her. I don't.
No, I don't either. I don't either. And I also think that there is a conversation to be had around using sex as a tool to numb.
and as an implement for instrument for power. And I think, yeah. I don't think it's right or wrong. I don't think it's shame or blame. I just think it is. And I think, I think it is actually particularly the ability to just feel good, even momentarily, to numb out the pain of the world. But I also think that kind of in the tribe of Little Kim and many women, that numbing out pain, using sex to numb out pain, is like a very real tool. And I don't think it is always a healthy I don't think it's always a healthy tool.
It's not. And I read a statistic that said that during COVID, people are going to, there's like AA for sex addicts, essentially. And they said that during COVID, it skyrocketed. People seeking help for sexual addiction. And some people believe it was because the quarantine and isolation for the first time had disconnected people from essentially their drugs. You know what I'm saying? And then people were for the first time able to reflect on the fact that like maybe they were really actually using it in super unhealthy ways or really were addicted. And so everything you're saying is absolutely true. And in fact, I think that we can play tricks. My mind is playing tricks. Something just came to mind, but we can play tricks on our own mind even, or we can create narratives that are supportive of what we're doing without interrogating, is this really the source of what it is? It's why our walking is so powerful and even this series is so powerful, because part of what we have to do is be able to spend time with ourselves to understand the choices we're making. And a big part of the outcomes of our lives are based on the quality of the questions we ask. There's some famous people who said it, but that's the paraphrase. And
my therapist was asking some good questions this morning. I was like, sir, this is why I pay you the big bucks. This is an excellent question. Sorry. Yeah. I was writing them down because I was like, yeah, the quality of questioning that we ask ourselves is so powerful. And we'd be tricking ourselves with these old straw man questions. Like, Emma, do I want to be empowered or not? And that's not the question. It's, are you sad?
That is not the question. I yesterday got on my yoga mat with my journal. I was just feeling like I'm really noticing on my body now and all sorts of things. And I was just like, you feel some sort of way about something. I can't even pinpoint it. But I was just like, sit here and ask yourself, what is it? And I was just like, I could feel it. I could feel it specifically in my pelvis. I could feel, and I was just like, ask yourself what it is, or at least try to figure it out and like see if your body is going to give you an answer, see if God's going to give you an answer. But we have to ask ourselves questions. We have to spend time with ourselves enough. And then we have to be okay to have the right answer. I mean, to have the answer not be what we want. Do you know what I'm saying? Or like to sit with the truth in a way, and that goes back to our Speak the Truth episode, that can hit you in the face. It is what I respect about everything I have read about Little Kim and the plastic surgery, and what she is, that she is not unaware of the fact that she has made some beauty choices that, and she even said it, she was like, yeah, because when I first started wearing contacts, she was like, I was thinking about how all the guys who, when I was younger, only wanted to date light-skinned girls. And it's like, we can say till the wheels come off, like, no, please, still beautiful, but it has such an impact on women. And you were so right about like from overeating to not, like, we have these ways that we have internalized negative messaging about ourselves, and we just have to figure out ways to break it down.
It is the same thing that when Black women are being strong and aggressive, it's the same smoke and mirrors. If you are trying to perform worthiness, you're trying to perform worthiness in a way that that other people have told you your worth lies. And so, you know, it's fascinating. You do have to heal. I married somebody safe, and for 10 years, I was in basically a sexless marriage with my best friend. And I healed, and I healed, and I healed. And I pleaded, and I prayed, and I fell into the floor in depression, and I practiced sex, and I practiced kissing, and I practiced intimacy, and I healed. And when I was healed, I realized that I had a sexual appetite that wasn't being filled. And then I moved to Africa and got in a safe, loving, very sexually charged, beautiful relationship.
and everybody talk about the African sun is healing you. No,
the African sun.
I'm just saying it was daily fulfillment with somebody I was madly in love with. That's what it was. And when I look around there, it looked like everybody having sex, good, healthy in the marriage. Yeah. Everybody's married by the time they're 25, 26. And
yeah.
Like it's rare to find a 30-year-old man who's not married.
And happy about that, by the way, even happy about the idea of it. And in expectation that they will have like genuinely beautiful, hot, sexy sex within their marriage.
Yes. And so now I'm at a point where I don't want to have in the dark, you know, bust one out kind of sex. I don't like it. It feels gross. It doesn't feel like I am being expanded and lifted up. And like, you know, there is a kind of sex out there, y'all. If you haven't had it, you need to. It is where two or three are gathered. God is there. I don't mean to be blasphemous, but I am just saying you can see, hear, feel the face of God by the expansiveness, the radical connection of all things that is and ever will be. There is that kind of union between man, woman, the divine feminine, and this righteous, beautiful, masculine energy that you can confront, or whatever configuration of sex, there is expansiveness. You don't just have to clench down and have this kind of tight, like shameful, dirty. Like you don't have to have that. Now, I'm not saying it all got to be blissful and you know and butterflies and all this stuff. I'm saying you can. You can have, you know what I'm saying? But I'm just saying, like, and when it doesn't feel like that to me now, Vanessa, it feels sinful. It feels like disconnect from my greatest self.
Yeah.
And so, and that's why I'm celibate right now, because I just want to make sure that it's going to stay in a place that feels expansive. And
I love that, Morgan. I love it.
Yeah.
And one, thank you for being transparent and just thank you for sharing. And y'all, we're just out here really trying to have conversations. And it's hard, you know, we have to share our own experiences, but it's just what is necessary. And no, I understand exactly what you're saying. And in fact, I'm grateful now that I have with a partner now who like, he hates makeup sex. He's just like, I don't believe in that. He's like, it's toxic. And he was just like, if we've had an argument, he genuinely was like, we need to reestablish the loving connection by which we have sex and not this like panicked connection of like, get back together. And so I'll be like, it's day three, we made up.
No, Vanessa, no.
Oh my God. He'd be like,
we're trying to wield your power. No.
Let's look into each other's eyes. And I'm just like, this is different. But I hate him for saying this, and we've gotten into huge arguments, and I think he could be totally wrong, so don't send him hate mail, but it is his opinion on this. He thinks that African American culture in particular uplifts and celebrates toxic makeup sex. And he was just like, there is something about that kind of baby boy, like, ooh, we arguing and then we get back together, like thing that comes through in like the movies and music videos in this way that like the other type of love that doesn't include that like tragic thing that you have to overcome, we don't see as much of it. And I do think
no,
there
it's
is some
fire. It's burning away pain. It's how do you burn away pain? And it's everything from like the immediate ease of drugs to the immediate ease of just a hard and fast, you know, session. That's what I'm saying. And it just is like this kind of immediate dopamine or euphoria. And it is not healthy. I'm telling you, it is addictive and it is not healthy. And I actually,
you can't sort your feelings out, y'all. You can't sort your feelings out.
That's actually it. In my relationship now, we actually have something incredibly precious. Like the number one sacred thing in our relationship is our physical relationship. It's so beautiful. You saw us together. It's magnetic. It's like God lives there. It is like we see each other and it's like, whoa, look away. Look away. Hi. You know, it's like that. But what I don't want is for that to be for me to be confused or me not to be able to sort out my feelings on what makes me healthy, happy, and whole on a daily basis because I'm so distracted
Like that woman in that video you sent me. That woman in that video you sent me. I'm so distracted by the G. You know what I'm saying? I need to get my feelings together. That's what I need to get myself together.
Exactly.
So I very much look at, listen, y'all getting invited to the wedding. I gotta figure it out first.
I want to say one last thing about Little Kim's story before we close that I appreciate, because it was very public that while Notorious B.I.G. was married to Faith Evans, that Little Kim was his mistress and they were sleeping together the whole time. Her and Faith had many major public beefs, including at the actual funeral. Everybody's like, Lil' Kim was up in there just falling out, and she ain't even the wife. And she's, you know, it was like one of those scenarios, and they had so much bad blood. But I love that now she speaks of the fact that they healed and reconciled. And she was, and they even went on tour together in like 2016. And she talks about it as a real space of growth for her, Morgan. And she said that at the end of the day, they're family. And she said, and that they're really sisters. And she was like, and so I had to humble myself and see where I was wrong. We had to put ourselves in a, she had to put herself in a position where she was willing to hear me and heal. And they have, as two Black women. And sometimes we don't get to hear those type of stories of reconciliation, but they have worked through their issues. They reconciled, they made a song together, they toured together, and found a shared bond and sisterhood through their love and experience of Notorious B.I.G., which I also just love and appreciate.
Did you say a word to close? I know you had an intention of opening up the phone lines, but I actually have appreciated the spaciousness of your storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that another time. I think it's okay. We can manage expectations. It's okay. Can you say a little bit about why you chose to use the words banish shame? And can you give us a word around how you banish shame, what shame, like why you chose that and what that means, or like close us out there? Because I'm curious.
Yeah. I chose it because I feel like I have personally been in so many rooms, in so many actual personal conversations with people who I care about and love, where they have said things that I didn't speak up on the time, that felt like they were shaming me about my own sexual choices, preferences, what I liked, even music, how I dressed, all sorts of things. I felt like I have been on the other side of it so much, and that I held a lot of that kind of shame. And I just don't believe in it for people. And so I was like, individually, you have to banish shame, the projection of shame onto you, the shame that you have curated and cultivated inside, the we can use another word for it. Sometimes it's the silence and stigma that comes with talking about sex, with having sexual feelings and experiences. And I think that it is so prevalent in our community. And it provides, by the way, a cover for molestations and molesters. It provides an opportunity for sexual misconduct to enter into when we feel shamed about healthy sex, when we feel shamed about healthy decisions and choices, when we feel shamed about just expressing ourselves in the fullness of who we are. And I don't want that for anybody. I don't want it for individual little girls who are just coming into their own bodies and are experiencing all sorts of hormonal changes. I don't want it for grown-ass women who've been carrying stuff that you should have put down a long, long, long time ago. And I especially, within this 21-day conversation, wanted a space where we can acknowledge and honor that we have, as Black women, experienced a lot of that. And it especially has been from each other and from the women figures in our lives. And it's just, I feel like it's actually a acceptable part of the sex story that we tell and the language and energy that we use. And I would like to banish that from our communities. And I would like to have for our conversations to be open and free flowing, for us to use language that is accurate, and for us to make space that people, first of all, every single person deserves love. Every single person deserves to melt like I do into my man's arms, and to feel like what that feels like when somebody beholds you, like really bears witness to you, like really, like everybody deserves that. And so to cut somebody off from that, to say that they arrived at it through a partner or a sexual orientation or an experience or whatever that you don't agree with,
it's just so small. So I had all of those things in mind when I was thinking about vanishing.
Wow, I'm so glad I asked.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. Yeah. So y'all, don't hold on to no shame. Let it all go. This is Juneteenth weekend. We are the whole national staff, y'all. Our staff is grinding. They are out there and making healing happen. It's taking Monday off. It is a holiday. The drill check office will be closed. We got our out of offices on. We will not be on the line on Monday for boot camp. And so we will be live back for boot camp on Tuesday. We have plenty of days in June to do all 21 days, so don't worry. Take Monday off. Experience some sort of freedom in your body. Host a welcome walk. Experience a welcome walk. Wear your blue shirt in solidarity. This is a weekend where we can make every single Black woman feel loved.
Yay.
That's all I got. This man that came over with the lawnmower. Got to walk fast back to the office. All right, y'all. We're going to close out. We're going to close out with
bye, everyone.
Lady Marmalade.